profligate loafers or the victims of an unprecedented intergenerational theft. These are the fairly extreme views on either side of the debate over whether millennials and Gen Z are inheriting a raw economic deal. A new report from the Grattan Institute leans towards the latter, citing a raft of government policies that have entrenched existing demographic biases towards the baby boomer generation doing well at the expense of their children and grandchildren. Michael Yander is our regular Monday finance commentator. You don't know what you're doing to our text line this morning, Michael, and be wary.
I have a fair idea, Hamish.
I, like you, am a millennial, so be careful what you say. This debate has obviously raged for years. Stereotypes, obviously, of the exploitative boomer landlord, the spendthrift millennial eating too much avocado and piccolo lattes. What does the Grattan Institute actually find?
Well, it finds conclusively that the wealth of households under 35 years of age has barely moved since 2004, and poorer young Australians, those less well off in that age group, are much worse off. They have less wealth than their predecessors, and they're far less likely to own a home than preceding generations. Over the same period, older households' wealth has increased by more than 50%. The typical real wealth for a household headed by someone aged between 65 and 74 has gone from just over $500,000 in 1994 to $1.3 million now. That's in real terms, adjusted for inflation. That's largely down to the housing boom plus superannuation. Younger Australians are less likely to have shared in this housing wealth because, first of all, the boom has been and gone before most of them were of an age to buy. And secondly, home ownership levels for 30-year-olds have dropped from 67% in the early 1980s to just 45%. Now, and again, that's much worse for poorer people in that age group. They've fallen from 60% home ownership in that early 80s to just 20% now. And the Grattan Institute's Danielle Wood says it's not because of profligate spending that many young people are unable to afford a house.
Yes, young people today spend around 30% more than young people did 30 years ago. But all of that is going on to essentials, particularly on housing, which has gone up a huge amount in that time. Younger people today are actually spending less on discretionary items, things like clothes, household furnishings, alcohol, than younger people were 30 years ago. So this is not about the profligate habits of today's young.
That's report author Danielle Wood from the Grattan Institute. And in fact, Hamish, according to the report, older households are spending much more in real terms than they did, than the same age group did 3 decades ago, 50 to 80% more versus 10 to 30% more for young people.
What are they spending on? Renovations?
Discretionary spending,
yeah,
mainly.
Right. I mean, it's very interesting what she was saying there, because already the texts that we start to get on these kind of issues are from people in that boomer generation saying, well, we worked really hard, we created all the wealth, it's going to be passed on, and young people spend too much money. And so the interesting point that this report is making is that actually they're not. These young people
are
not.
They are spending money, but not much more than previous young generations. And most of that increased spending, in fact, more than all of it, is on essentials. They've actually cut back discretionary spending.
And there's an interesting warning here about policy reform and the suggestion that unless significant policy reform occurs, then this generation will be the first in living memory to be worse off than their parents.
That's right. And it comes down to taxation. So at the same time as young people's incomes are stagnating, which is more important if you're at the start of your working career, older people have had this boost in housing and superannuation wealth to offset some of the stagnation in incomes. But at the same time as that's happening, the share of households over 65 paying tax has declined dramatically from 27 to just 17% over the past 2 decades. A working household on $100,000 a year now pays nearly 2.5 times more tax than an older retired household on the same income. Adding insult to injury, over the past 3 decades, young Australians 25 to 34 years old have actually received less in net government benefits than they used to, while benefits going to older Australians have increased at the same time as their incomes have increased and they've become wealthier. And Danielle Wood says that means today's young people look set to inherit a budget crisis.
As the population ages, governments need to spend more on things like health and pensions. There are going to be fewer working age people for every person over 65 to pay for that. And the government's really supercharged those pressures through a series of policy decisions which have made tax settings much more generous for older Australians. So all of that means in the future, younger people are either going to have to pay more tax or accept lower levels of services in order to keep the budget under control.
That's Danielle Wood, and some of the key policy proposals, Hamish, are to swap stamp duties for land tax, lower income tax and increase the GST, increase the pension age, that'll be controversial, and include the family home in the assets test, perhaps even more controversial, tax super earnings, all super earnings in retirement at 15%, currently most of those are untaxed, and reduce the capital gains tax discount and wind back negative gearing, and we know how those proposals went at the last election.
Well, I suppose the suggestion for young people heading into Christmas this year is to read this report, go armed with that to the Christmas table, ready for those conversations that inevitably happen. Now, the Federal Treasurer may not be racing to consider any of those reform ideas, but he has flagged rapid action on some of the recommendations from the Banking Royal Commission.
Yeah, Josh Frydenberg revealed an implementation roadmap for the 54 Banking Royal Commission recommendations that relate to the federal government. The Treasurer is committing to have legislation before Parliament addressing all 54 of those recommendations by the end of next year, with more than a third of these before Parliament next year. So quite an ambitious timetable, some extra money to Treasury and the government solicitors to draft up that legislation.
And the corporate regulator is set to move fast as well?
Yeah, ASIC's half-yearly enforcement update for the first half of this year showed investigations rose 20% compared to the past year, and that was in more the case for the big four banks, Macquarie and AMP, where investigations were up more than 50%. ASIC will no doubt be hoping those investigations go better than their responsible lending case against Westpac, which they lost last week.
And how are the markets set to start the week, Michael?
We've got a lot of profit reports out this week, Hamish. That'll drive the share market. BlueScope, Lendlease and NIB, the ones to watch today. Tomorrow, it's the big Australian BHP. Crown's results on Wednesday will give analysts and the media a chance to quiz the company more about its revelations around Chinese high rollers and how they lure them into the country. Qantas and Flight Centre are both out on Thursday. Medibank Private, also a big one that day. And we've also got the annual Central Bankers Conference in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. The theme is challenges for monetary policy, and there are plenty of those. The Fed's chairman, Jay Powell, is speaking on Friday. RBA governor, our own Reserve Bank governor, Philip Lowe, on Friday as well, which is Saturday our time. And markets, Hamish, look set to start the week positively. The S&P 500 was up 1.4% on Friday, and the ASX futures are up half that, 0.7%. The Australian dollar steady at 67.8 US cents.
Michael Yonder, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Michael is the ABC Senior Digital Business Reporter.